Hello, everybody. We want to start tonight's episode of The Call with a moment of silence for those lives lost in Pittsburgh over the weekend from an absolutely terrible tragedy, a massacre, a murder. 11 people were murdered while they were practicing their own religion, and a madman came in and took 11 lives away from this world because of their faith, because they were Jewish. And normally, you know, on a Ravens podcast, you don't expect us to say, you know, very nice things about Pittsburgh, and there's that big rivalry there with the Steelers. But all of this goes past football. It goes past any sort of rivalry. This is just humans thinking about other humans. And what happened in Pittsburgh over the weekend is horrendous. It's terrible. It should never happen. People should be able to practice whatever religion they believe in, as they see fit, as long as they're not hurting anyone. And we just want to let everyone out there have a couple seconds here to either say a prayer or meditate or send out good vibes or send out good thoughts or something, whatever, just to let the people of Pittsburgh know that we are with them, that they are not alone, and that we are stronger than hate, any kind of hate that's out there. And we've done this a lot. We started shows off a lot like this, unfortunately, and I wish we didn't have to do that. But normally we do 10 seconds of silence and then we get the show going. Today is going to be 11 seconds for the 11 people that were brutally murdered in Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh, just want to let you, everybody out there, know you are in our thoughts, you are in our prayers, and we are with you. You are not alone.
Said nevermore.
You're listening to The Call Podcast with Brandon and Josh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of The Call. It is a Baltimore Ravens podcast where we talk anything and everything Baltimore Ravens football. Thank you for listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. Well, let's see. The Ravens, I always say they went up against the Dillon Panthers, that high school team in Friday Night Lights. But unfortunately, the Ravens this past Sunday looked like the high school team. Man, what a loss against Carolina. Very unfortunate. Not a good thing to see. But joining me as always to talk all about it, every single game day is Halloween to this guy. My buddy Josh, what's going on, man?
Yeah, because I got that costume, man. I always rock it no matter what. Yeah, man, you know, it's Halloween week. I know you're excited. Did you catch the Halloween movie?
The new one, yeah. I went opening night. I went to my favorite theater, the Senator.
Senator, yep.
And went opening night Thursday, what was it, 2 weeks ago, the 19th. I went on the 18th, 7 o'clock show, first one I could get to. And I really enjoyed it. I liked the new one. It's a good sequel. I don't think it's my favorite sequel, but it's up there. I mean, if you want, like, Halloween is like choose your own adventure. You can go on all different kinds of Michael Myers adventures if you want. And if you want to go original and then this movie, you can. I really liked it. Did you see it yet?
Oh, yeah, man. You went opening night. I went the night after, actually, Friday night. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Had a good night out with some friends, and we got to enjoy the Halloween movie. Mike Myers, always a classic, to watch one of those slasher movies. And, you know, I know this is one of your favorites. I know you always, you know, sport the pin of the day, and you got some crazy ones. And, you know, it's pretty awesome, you know, to be festive. And, you know, I'll be kind of Orioles up tomorrow, you know, the orange and black kind of deal. And, you know, it should be fun. You know, I'll be working, obviously. But, you know, we do the candy thing at work. It's going to be fun, you know. You know, work hard, play hard kind of deal, and eat hard, I should say, eat hard. But, yeah, man, and speaking of that, the Ravens had a hard time on Sunday and had their own trick-or-treat, and they were definitely tricked, or we were all tricked, thinking, hey, you know, maybe they could have got this one on the road, and we were tricked the way the game started, and we were not treated to a complete game and a win there. I don't know what happened, dude. The way the game started, you had to really be liking it. If you're on the Ravens side of things, you know, rooting interest fans, you had to feel great. You know, the Ravens kind of did, again, what they always seem to do in the first quarter, especially this year, is they get the ball, you know, first, they go down the field, take half the quarter, score a touchdown, go 7-0, and even the defense, they helped them out there too. Held the Panthers 3-and-out, so you're like, okay, you know, great start to the game. We're going to really do it. And for some reason, after those series, the first series for the Ravens and the first series for the Panthers, it was kind of like a light switch went off. It was almost like watching the Super Bowl win, like we were up so big, and then even though we weren't up big in this game, and all of a sudden the Niners came out of nowhere. It was like a switch went off. Or the switch turned off for the Ravens, switch turned on for the Panthers, and it was like the Panthers said, okay, enough's enough, and the Ravens just fell into a black hole. I don't know what happened.
Well, on Sunday, I was coming back from the beach, so I was listening to the game as it was happening, and everything seemed good to go at the beginning. Like you said, there was a, you know, opening drive. It was a touchdown. Everything was going the Ravens' way, and then it seemed as if something happened when Lamar Jackson, I believe he underthrew Willie Snead. And things kind of fell apart after that. Alex Collins came up with a fumble. Willie Snead was like a flag machine on Sunday. He kept getting pass interference, offensive pass interference calls every single time he got thrown the ball. And it seemed as if things started to just unravel as it went. I mean, Ronnie Stanley had to leave the game for a little bit because he got hurt. What's going on with this offense right now? You know, I kind of said last week that the Panthers could come away with this one, that this one was a must win for the Ravens. And I think the offense kind of showed that it was a little one-dimensional. Even though Joe does have all these different wide receivers to throw to, the running game still is not there. I mean,
dude, it's not. I mean, you see how bad the line is. It's atrocious. And everybody's like, well, is it the running backs? I think it's a combination, but it's got to be the line because the line is not blocking. And I feel like the line is the weak link here as far as the offensive woes, man. I mean, I don't know if what you're seeing, but I'm kind of seeing that, especially coming to light in the last few games.
Yeah, so Alex Lewis, he was out again, correct?
Who was out?
Alex Lewis.
Yeah, he did not play. He was definitely not capable of playing. Now, there was a chance that he could have played, you know, but he's been limited, and as of right now, I don't know if he'll see the field at least after the bye week.
All right, so he was out. Ronnie Stanley was playing hurt towards the end. He couldn't really do everything that he wanted to do. And we saw Jermaine Illuminor come back into the game. He was the guy that got drafted last year from London. Didn't really have a great showing. Didn't make the team. Went to the practice squad, and then he got reactivated. So, I mean, obviously the offensive line is taking some hits, and they're not as deep as you would want them to be because you do have guys that, you know, originally were cut now performing on the offensive line.
Right, and I mean, this happened a few years ago when we lost Yanda, and you can kind of see the effects of that. And Alex Lewis, he was one of those one of those links that we needed in there. And now that we don't have him, at least that first initial game when he went out, it was like, okay, well, we might get by with Orlando Brown Jr. We might get by with, you know, shuffling the line there. But I don't know, dude. I'm not confident going forward with this group of guys. I feel like the line is as weak it's probably it's ever been in recent memory. I mean, if there was a time where this line was solid, you know, across the board, we had players there that could really hold it, especially in the running game. And I feel like when they're trying to block, especially for the running game, I think the players are getting pushed off the line there, and they're just not holding the blocks. Now, passing versus running, I know it's different schemes, different way you have your body, different blocking. But as far as the running game, you know, we haven't really had that push where you're holding the lanes. And I see the different NFL games across Sundays, man, where you're constantly watching these running backs like find these lanes, and it even happened on Monday night. You know, there was a couple times that more often times than not, McCoy for the Bills, you know, speaking of Monday Night Football, had a loss. Running for loss, but then when he had a game, he followed his block, and there was a hole, and there was a time, and maybe I'm getting to a point here, and here it is. Maybe because the way the league has gone and the offense have gone with the pass heavy, we haven't really had a fullback since probably Leach in the Super Bowl year, and then the hybrid fullback was Kyle Juszczyk, who left for the 49ers. I feel like the fullback is a position that has gone away. And I feel like, remember the old days where you had the I formation, you had your fullback, you had your halfback, tailback, running back, however you want to call him, and you ran in that I and you followed your lead blocker, and it was the extra blocker because you had the seven guys on the line, but then you also had that eighth guy to account for if they're sending eight or nine guys on 11, depending on how many they're sending. And you had that extra blocker, and he was big, he was a bruiser. And I feel like since the league and more offense have got away from that, it's all in the running back. And you're seeing the men separate from the boys, per se, is the elite running backs are getting it done themselves. But then especially single back and all that, but these running backs who probably relied on that fullback, they got to do it all themselves. And they're not, number one, they're not getting breakaway speed, they're not breaking tackles, they're slow getting the ball. It's just a lot of combinations, and I think that could be the really key. I mean, you want to talk line, you want to talk, you know, the running backs themselves aren't getting it done because they're mediocre at best, but I'm going to put it on the fullback position has been obsolete.
I mean, that's definitely a good case that you're showing off there. I mean,
we say agree with you, Josh. Next point, I'm messing with you.
No, I agree with you. I liked Kyle Juszczyk a lot. I definitely wanted him to stay with the Ravens. And Vontae Leach, man, he was my dude. He was a guy.
Remember that?
I love Leach, man. Yeah. He was fantastic. And that's honestly one of the reasons why Ray Rice was so so happy, you know, working with him. I mean, he made the holes for Ray Rice, and Ray Rice was able to get down the field. You know, that's why it's a team sport. It's not just one guy playing every single position. You need people to make you better. So, I mean, it sucks to see that. And as I say that, I don't want to single anybody out, but Alex Collins, how many times is this guy going to fumble the ball? It seems as if, you know, if you remember, he got let go by the Seattle Seahawks for this same reason, got picked up by the Ravens. He was on the practice squad, and right. Then Terrence West got hurt, and Alex Collins got activated. So, and then his first game with the Ravens last year, he fumbled the ball, and we thought he was working with it. But now, I mean, how many games this year already? We're halfway through the season. Has he fumbled the ball? This is a problem with Alex Collins. He may not be our number one guy going forward after this season.
He might not be. And the fumbles have been a big issue. I mean, the third one. Now, this was a tough one, man, because the last few I put on him. You know, the goal line was even worse because you're about to score, you're trying to make the last ditch effort, and you fumble the foot, and it's just like, really? But with this fumble, the way the play happened, it was so bang bang, it was kind of like the line forgot to block this guy, he got out there, and I think Collins was hit on the exchange. Yeah, you still got home the football, but I don't think he fully had possession of it and was starting his run before he got hit. Again, you know, my memory going back to watching the game on TV, it happened so quick, I would have to watch the replay. And I think when I really slowed it down and looked at it, it didn't really look as if Collins had, I mean, he had more of the ball than Joe did. Joe was already gone on his release, but it was on that exchange. And when it happens real quick and that defender's there, Collins, I feel like he got surprised and got hit with the defender, and he didn't have full control of the ball. So, but regardless of what happened there or not, you know, it's a fumble and it goes against him on that record. So he's got the fumbleitis, and, you know, we need to cure that sickness real quick. And it's just, it's really frustrating because I really thought Alex Collins was going to be that back, especially when we signed him out of nowhere with Seattle. You know, when we were searching for that void that Ray Rice left, and that hasn't been filled since, and we've been plugging players in, it hasn't worked. I mean, Buck Allen by default has been the better back, I feel, even though Alex Collins, they have a nice touchdown run. It's just, you know, it needs to be more consistent. And again, we can sit there and revert back to the beginning of the show and talk about line. The line contributes to pass blocking and run blocking, and we get it. But I feel like when at this point in the season, when you don't have a 100-yard rusher on record through 8 games, it's just really tough. And when these running backs, we're not posting. I mean, look at James Conner. He stepped in for Le'Veon Bell. He had 146 yards and 2 touchdowns on Sunday against the Browns. I mean, James Conner, Le'Veon Bell's backup. Like, you know, I wish our running backs did that again. Now, Pittsburgh's line might be better. You know, I would have to go back and really look on paper and grade that. They probably are better. You know, because we have rookie on the line and we don't have Alex Lewis. So, I mean, they could be better. I don't know their injuries, or I would have to go in their scouting report. But yeah, that's what I look at. I look at other, you know, other teams, and you might sit there and say, hey, man, well, why are you looking at other teams? Why don't we just concentrate on what we have? You know, well, it's all good and dandy, but you know, when my pastor said it best this past weekend when we were reviewing the games, he's like, why does it look so easy for other offenses? Like, you watch – like, we were watching the Minnesota game Sunday night, and he's like, Kirk Cousins, in that offense. He's like, they don't have powerful all-stars. I mean, Adam Thielen's become a star in his own right, and Stephon Diggs makes plays, but Kirk Cousins, you know, it's like Kirk Cousins versus Joe Flacco. Who would you take? But even that, or all their offenses, it makes – they look so easy. They're running routes. They're hitting slant routes. They're scoring points. And it's like – it's just like I feel like the Ravens, it's such a chore to watch them on offense. I don't know what it is. I just really don't. I don't know if it's the personnel we have, or if it's injuries, or if it's – I don't know. But I just feel like the running backs aren't hitting – like, I feel like – I don't know about you, dude, but if I'm an NFL running back and I hit that ball, get the ball, I'm hitting the whole running. I'm finding my lanes, and I'm going – I see a lot of juking, stutter-stepping. Stop being flashy. The NFL players are quick, defensive players especially. They're fast. They're coming after you. They know you're getting the ball. And I just feel like the Ravens need to keep it simple, but something's an issue, and it's a combination of the line, the players, mediocre play, and calling plays. It's just a lot to do with that, but it's leaving us all frustrated because when you're not running the football. Now, granted, Fleck only threw it, 39 times, right? So he didn't throw it a lot because I even joked and said, great, we can't run the ball, and we're losing by a large margin, so Fleck's going to have to throw it 70 times. But, I mean, we stuck with the run, but it's just not effective. And when it's not effective, you get one-dimensional. This is what happens.
And, I mean, I hate to say it, but I feel as if the Ravens really are one-dimensional. I don't know if this team can make a long run in the playoffs. I was saying this was a must-win against Carolina.
You did say that.
Yeah.
Now look at it. And then they lose the game. Now it gets harder, right?
Exactly. I mean, it is not an easy schedule coming up after the Steelers and then the bye week. After the bye week, I mean, it is a rough schedule with some really good opponents. But if the Ravens are going to stay one-dimensional like they are right now, I don't see this team making the playoffs, unfortunately. And I mean, I was listening to the game. It was at the third quarter, like halfway through the third. Jerry Sandusky was like, all right, if the Ravens are going to do anything, it has to start now. There's not enough time to make up, you know, the points that they're going to need if they don't do something now. And the Ravens and Joe and the offense went 3-and-out on that next set of the next drive. That's not what I want to see in the third quarter. 3-and-out is not acceptable for a team this late into the season and that late in a game that, you know, you're trying to get some points here and beat this team. It looked like they weren't really trying at that point. So,
and I'm really interested to see with these successful offenses in the league and the teams this year of I really want to break this down. I mean, I say this, and I have aspirations to do that, but it probably would take a lot of time than I think. But I really want to break down how successful other teams are on third down, or how many 3-and-outs do they really have? Now, it could be the defenses are playing. I mean, there's a lot of variables week to week in any game you're playing. I mean, who knows? You know, but you're right. When offenses go three and out, it's like, really? Like, you can't get 10 yards? And it sounds so simple. You have three plays to get 10 yards. You average three and a half yards a play. Every three plays, you're first down. If you can get a first down on first or second. But it sounds so simple, yet the Ravens, I feel, make it so difficult, and it's been like that for a long time. It's laborious. It's like, really? It's they always put themselves on third and long. Let's say it's like this. No, it's you see the typical drives. Let's get creative. Let's go in a shotgun, but instead of looking like a throw, let's hand off Alex Collins on a draw. Let's say he gets 2 yards, a second and eight. Okay, then okay, now you're a second and eight, so you're kind of like now in a must pass situation, because if you run it again and get stuffed, you're still there. So then they try to pass it to gain different yards. Let's say it's either incomplete. There's different scenarios there, but if it's incomplete, then you're third and eight. Then you have to throw it, and then if it's a short throw short of the sticks, and then you're third and short, then I feel like that's where teams really screw up, like the Ravens, because it's they want to get cute. Okay, well, it's third and two. Well, the book says to run the ball, especially if you have a good running game, because it's 2 yards. You don't want to throw the ball there, incomplete pass, get a pressure, get sacked, you know, the ball get – whatever, interception. You know, the playbook says to run it there unless you have an offensive, you know, mindset to really having a passing attack to move the ball there, then good. But and then there's fourth down. So I see it a lot of times where it could be maybe first down play calling in a certain situation. You know, a lot of times I feel like they just and I called it on TV. There was a time where Alex Collins was to Flacco's right, and he was like pointing, and I forget what he was doing at the line, but I said, nope, this is a draw play all the way, and I forget what down it was. But lo and behold, Joe Flacco handed it right to Alex Collins, and the girl next to me was just like, are you kidding me? You call that play? And I'm like, yeah. Like, you know, I've watched this team so many times that I just know. Like, you can tell what formation they're in. And I said, me as a fan who can watch it on TV, and I call it in plays and stands, but I'm like, if I can call it the play in the formation they're in, because I've seen this team so much, it's like, what do you think the opposing team does when they watch them on film? They're like, it's probably a draw play as well. So I feel like I'm in the huddle with the other opposing team's defense because I see what's coming. So that's sad. But I've done it a lot. But the moral of the story is this game, I mean, there were so many times where it was like you thought they were going to get it. Credit to Carolina. They played cat and mouse. You know, it was like cat and mouse. Like, you know, as close as the Ravens tried to make it, Panthers would just, you know, kind of just pull away. And again, you're listening to a radio, so I knew you had a different take on the game, obviously hearing audibly. But, you know, the way this game went for you, man, is especially watching it unfold, is the game had that feel of the Panthers played to the Ravens' weaknesses, that the Ravens were ultra-aggressive and blitzing so hard, and they were trying to press so hard that it was effortless. And what happens is the middle of the field all day for the defense was left wide open. And there was one play – and I mean, there's a lot of plays. There's actually two plays that kind of broke them. Me, it was that DJ Moore where it was like the missed pitch or something where it was like could have been a fumble, and Mosley had a bad angle. And I don't know if you saw the highlights or whatnot, but Mosley took a bad angle. Instead of like a huge loss, DJ Moore ran it like 20 yards up the field, like almost untouched and out of bounds. It was like, really? And then another play happened to where it was, and I said this too, and I spoke it. I was like, the Ravens scored late in the third that touchdown, and I was like, okay, they threw the buck out, you know, touchdown over the middle. I was like, okay, they pulled it there, and the Ravens had the Panthers almost on three out. It was third and two, and I was like, you stop them here, get the ball back with like 13 minutes or so left in the fourth. You're only down, I think at that point they were down two scores. I can't remember if it was 14 to 27 or 14 to. I think it was 14 to 27 at that point. So it was two touchdowns. So, and then what happened was the Ravens brought the pressure, and the middle field's wide open. I think Greg Olsen went like up the field like 30 plus yards first down. It was near midfield for you knew it. Then he went down, and then Cam Newton had that really crazy play where he faked everybody out for the touchdown ceiling win. Was he went to hand it off, and everybody crashed right. He bootlegged left, and he was untouched, and he spread his arms, and Suggs was trailing him, and it was like, really? That's embarrassing. So that was the turning point of the game. But, again, how the game started and then how it just went, you're like, all day. I was really frustrated. I was just like, what is wrong with this team? Like, you know, and you hear the coach speak. You hear all the time on the pressers and the players. It's, we got our butts kicked. Well, this is disappointing. You know, we have to step on the next. We have to finish. We have to put the, you know, mash the pedal down. We have to keep the foot on the gas. You hear these cliches week after week when they lose these type of games. But I'm like, but show me. I'm tired of the talk, man. I don't know if you hear it in the post-game conferences, but I'm tired of the talk is, we got to do better. We got to go back and film and correct it. No, you got up to a 7-0 lead on the road. You went right down the field, did everything right. What happened with that? And then especially the comeback against the Saints, man, you know, where is that all game? Like, do the Ravens got to have a sense of urgency to, like, let's go down the field in 3 or 4 plays and score a touchdown in less than a minute? Like, we've seen this song and dance before. You know, so it's like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just – right now I'm frustrated because we're at that mark in the season where they're going to go it's going to go real bad or it's going to go real good because, I mean, the Ravens are 500 halfway through the season. You know, 8 weeks or 4-4, you know, and it's just not a good look when they only have that one road win is in Pittsburgh and 3 losses and then with the home loss there, it's just – it's dire straits and it doesn't get easier. And then with the Steelers and Bengals both winning, I mean, the division's still within reach at this point. They're not out of the playoff picture, but they're not playing like a playoff team. And like you alluded to earlier, they're not doing things as teams at this juncture in the season do. You know, they're sputtering or they're losing their identity. And right now, I can't really identify the Ravens. Remember back when we talked about that, where we identified them earlier in the shows?
Sure.
Yeah, we did. We were like, okay, this is who they are. They have a nasty defense. Their offense is, you know, hey, we have an offense now. That John Brown was getting the deep balls. Crabtree was moving the chain. Snead, you know, we had it going on, and we had tight ends. It was great. You know, in the running game, and we were hoping at that point, making excuses for it, we hoped the running game would just catch up. And all of a sudden, you know, because, you know, you beat the Broncos, and you go and beat the Steelers, like, oh, yeah, and everything's looking great. And then all of a sudden, the Ravens can't get out of their own way. And now there's a lot of finger pointing, a lot of questions and you know, in the air. And I feel like the Ravens made a move at the trade deadline here to trying to shake things up because I think that's what they're looking to do. And, you know, obviously we don't want to leave with this. The Ravens actually did make a move at the trade. And there was a lot of busy trade. Today was busy before the deadline at 4 p.m. being it was on Tuesday 30th. The Ravens weren't the only team, but I'll cover the Ravens first, obviously, first and foremost, and then we'll break it down towards the end of the rest of the moves. There were some surprising moves. But the Ravens sent a draft pick to Green Bay. They sent a 7th-round 2020 pick to Green Bay to acquire a wide receiver turned running back because of the situation in Green Bay. Ty Montgomery, he used to be a receiver for the Packers under Aaron Rodgers, and it just didn't work out there. And they had so many injuries at the running back position, they had to turn to a wide receiver depth chart at that point to say, hey, you're filling in for a running back. And that's what happened. And then he ended up being formidable for him for a few seasons. And then now with them drafting a few running backs now and having Aaron Jones up there and having Jamal Williams, it was time, you know, for him to move on. And everybody's really, I guess, in arms, man, because did you hear about his situation this past Sunday in L.A.?
When no.
The Packers played the Rams? Okay. So I'll shed some light on it. So, by the way, the Packers-Rams game was probably the best game of the weekend. So, and the Rams won by 2 points. Well, you know how great Aaron Rodgers is leading the Packers the comebacks and everything. So, Rams go up. It's 27-29, and they kick a ball off, and I think it was just under 2 minutes on the clock. So instead of, you know, usually you would take a touchback, get out in the 25, Aaron Rodgers has the full almost 2 minutes to go, you know, take him down and maybe kick a field goal or even a touchdown. And all of a sudden, instead of it, well, the ball wasn't kicked off all the way back in the end zone. It was kicked in the front. So instead of taking a touchback or a knee there, Ty Montgomery, who's now a Raven, returning kicks and kickoffs for the Packers at that point. And apparently there's a big stink of it. So I'll finish this, and then I'll give you the scenario on the back end. So instead of taking a knee and getting on the 25-yard line, he decides to take it out to try to make a play because it was on the front end near the goal line. Well, needless to say, the Packers never got the ball. They had no timeouts. What happened was Ty Montgomery fumbled the return. Rams recovered it. Packers lose by 2 points. Now they're 3-3 and with the tie. So, and everybody visibly mad, Aaron Rodgers, everybody. And then there was a lot of blame to go around. So the anonymous source on the Packers said apparently he was mad with coaches because apparently he got taken out on some play or something. So he kind of did that as a rogue thing on his own to show him that, hey, I'm going to make a play. That was the anonymous source. And then what Ty Montgomery actually came out and said, he was interviewed saying, that's not the case at all. He doesn't do that. He's not a man of that character. He said the kicker, who was Greg Zuerlein, usually kicks kickoffs in the back of the end zone, so he can't return them. But he said this particular kick, it was near the goal line, and you have a split decision, and he didn't check to see where he was, and he didn't want to be the guy to kneel it and be near the goal line, or let's say he knelt it outside the goal line, and he'd be on the one-yard line, and then he just pinned his team back. So he kind of just did it just to save face, saying, hey, I just caught it, ran, and hopefully make a play. And really, the chances of fumbling them, you never really see that, but it just is that one fluke thing that happened, and he's a scapegoat. And then everybody's making a big uproar because he was brought here with the trade. And you're like, okay, well, is he here to replace Alex Collins? Because Alex Collins has the fumble latest, too. And then you bring this guy. But as I alluded to, and I was talking about this actually to a friend, Richie, on the call Facebook page. You know, I said, how many current Ravens cost us games, whether it's this season or last season or past games? And I said, Tucker's the most recent. And it cost us a game, but it cost us to extend the game to overtime. He missed an extra point. Whether the wind took it or not, it went off his foot. He kicked it. He was the last to touch the ball. It missed. We lose by one. So, you know, how many times has Flacco thrown a pick at the end of the game when driving? How many times does a receiver drop a ball or a lineman miss a block or a running back not get the assignment right or whatever? Or defense is on the field last and they let the offense go right down the field and didn't get their assignments. Most recently, obviously, we know the Bengals game last year. So, Brandon, you know, I look at it and I was like, I think the Ravens made this move to shake things up, because I feel like now that they're 4-4, they're at that crossroads. I feel like they made a move. I didn't think they made a move just to make a move. The team really wouldn't do that personnel wise. Now they carry four running backs, and that's the thing going into the Steelers week this coming week. And thank God Steelers week is my favorite week. But now they carry not only Ty Montgomery, but Alex Collins, Buck Allen, and Gus Edwards now. But I set the table with that because Ty Montgomery's that hybrid. He could be used in any sort of ways. Maybe he could return kicks for us because we lack in that department. He can move him in a lot of ways. And that's another point. It's Ty Montgomery. I don't think he would do that on purpose. I don't know who he is. I don't follow the Packers, you know, who he is as far as a player like that. But my take is because he was willing to play any and all positions, I don't think he was a selfish player that got caught in the moment. So whatever bad news came out of that or whether bad stigma, I don't think he's going to bring here, and I think he's going to do well for us. I like the move. It's an interesting move. I'm not like jumping up and down about it, overexcited to go, oh my God, we just got a game-changing player at a steal. Like, I mean, I know the Cowboys got Amari Cooper, the cover others. There's some new players and new teams here. The Broncos traded Demaryius Thomas to the Houston Texans, so they got Hopkins and Demaryius Thomas. Look out, because Will Fuller's out for the year. You might know him. The Packers were busy. They shipped another player. They shipped, remember the corner, Brandon, Aha Clinton Dix?
Yes.
He's now a Redskin.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that was no big news. And the Eagles upgraded their receiver core. They snagged Golden Tate from the Detroit Lions. So the Lions traded Golden Tate to the Eagles. So there's been some movement today, which really doesn't happen. You see it in other sports. NBA is usually more active at a trade deadline. NFL is not. NFL is free agent frenzy, as we call it. But today it was movement city. And Ravens benefited from a move. And I say welcome, Ty Montgomery. I personally, again, just knowing what I know and from fantasy football knowledge and watching the Packers, I don't know much about him. I only have a short amount of time to read up on him, so I just knew he's a versatile player. Again, I say if he helps us win, put him wherever and let him fly. So, but he's part of the flock now. So, man, I don't know if he'll be active for Sunday. We'll get to that later this week because he came in this week. I don't know if he'll be up to speed with the playbook and all that. Usually when a new player comes, now we have the bye week the following week. I think you might not see him until the Bengals game. But, hey, you know, I don't coach the team, and I'm not on the personnel movement. So, what do I know, right? But it's my speculation. But we have a new Raven. It's going to be interesting to see how that comes in, to light, and see how he's going to benefit the team. But Brandon, man, it's – I don't know. Now you said it was a must-win. I said it was an important win. Now the Ravens sitting at 4-4, they got some work to do. But it just wasn't that – it wasn't that defensive performance that we were used to. And it just leaves scratching your head, right? Like, they dominate, you know, the Titans so good. They held Drew Brees to 7 points essentially through three quarters, and then they let 17 points. So it's like from that moment on, I don't want to see the teams unraveling, but you're seeing the effects, and I don't really know where they're going to go at this point. But they got to get in gear.
I don't know where they're going to go either. I would feel a lot better if this team had won in Cleveland and they
– aha, you know, there it is.
If they would have gotten that win and then lost against Carolina, I would have been like, okay, they had a bad day. You know, it's not what you want to see. But I would feel more comfortable about this team if they had shown up in Cleveland. I mean, look at them against New Orleans. That game – could have gone to overtime. They could have won it. I, if it wasn't for a gust of wind, I really do think, I don't think it was Tucker. I think it was a gust of wind. If there wasn't that gust of wind, you know, we might not be talking the way we are right now. But unfortunately, a loss is a loss. That's what it's going to show up as. But they played really well against Drew Brees, one of the best in the world. So to see them go two losses now in a row, that's very disheartening. And now they're up against their rival in the Steelers, their division rival, and they already beat the Steelers once. It's very rare for teams to sweep their arch rival in one season, so we'll discuss that on Friday, of course. But this might be the way it is the rest of the season. It may be just kind of guessing, will this team show up on this day? That's what I was worried about with this Carolina game. I really did think they didn't win this one, it was going to be a struggle the rest of the year. And unfortunately, I think that's what we're in for. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully we don't see the Ravens we saw this past Sunday. So, Josh, have we covered everything for this Red Eye review of the Ravens versus the Panthers?
Yeah, I'm reviewing this one, man. I got to bury this one quickly because it's Steelers week in Baltimore, and you got to get pumped up. I don't care if they're 4-4 or they're 0-8. It's Steelers week, and I'm going to say a hearty quote the Raven, never more.
All right, guys, if you want to continue the conversation with Josh or I, you can. It's real easy. All you have to do is tweet to either one of us. You can tweet to me at Brando Cash. Josh, where can people tweet to you at?
Brandon, they can always tweet to me at Italian and GQ52.
All right, go over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thecallpodcast. Like us over there. Whenever a new show comes out, you'll be the first to know. Plus, we're always sharing any kind of Ravens news that we find funny or informative or whatever. We will be sharing it with you guys, and it's a good place to have some discussions about the Ravens over on our Facebook page. So go like us over there. We do the show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. All we ask in return is for you to please spread the word about the show. Write us an Apple Podcast review, and then let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat and Vero and Twitch, anywhere you are social on the web with your phone. Say, I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I listen to The Call, and you should too. So that is pretty much it for this show. We will be back on Purple Friday to discuss Ravens versus Steelers. But for now, Josh, take us out the way you always do.
Brandon, man, thanks always. And, you know, I know it's hard to watch. You know, it's very frustrating. And a lot of – there's a lot of that frustration, discord, discontent here in Ravens land because a lot of fans are starting to grumble. And we always know winning cures all. And, you know, we get it. You know, it's always great. I mean, hey, the Rams right now, I'm sure everything's peaches over there. But I'm sure if you probably peek into now some of the things that maybe the media covered on the Rams, I'm sure it's not all peaches and cream over there. I'm sure even at 8-0 how the Rams are sitting right now, the only undefeated team in the NFL, I'm sure there's something to nitpick over there because they can do better. And, you know, they're not out, you know, setting the world on fire and blitzing people by 40 points a game, you know. So the Ravens, they're the Ravens. They do good in some games. They do bad, but I feel like the Ravens really have to get in gear now, being that they play 5 out of the last 8 at home, 3 straight. I mean, hey, the whole month of November, they're home, including a bye week. So something to be proud of, and I feel like if the Ravens – now, Flock and Ravens Nation get down to the stadium and really pack the house back in the day and really show the team that we still care and we're still behind them. You know, I hate to do a rally cry here, but hey, it's Steelers week. The place should be packed out purple and black style, and we should just be letting new Steeler fans get any tickets. If not, they got to pay dearly. But, you know, it's got to start now, and whatever woes they're having – you know, they're going to come to light, whether it is the injury bug or whether it's Alex Lewis on the line, and that's the key. It's going to come to light, or the running game. Is Ty Montgomery that infusion? I don't know. He's not the second coming of Jamal Lewis here, where we've gotten away from that ground and pound and you know, bruiser back and fullbacks. And I feel like this is going to be more finesse and the way the offense is going. So I'm only excited for that part. I'm also excited to see what the Ravens can do in the second half of this year, you know, turning in now that we're already past the second quarter of the season, and the Ravens, you even things out, and they're 4-4 respectively, you know, and we got 2 months of football left and got 8 games. The Ravens right now can go 6-2 to get 10 wins. So that's a tough task, because it's like, what 2 games are they going to lose and what 6 are going to win? It's fun to talk about, fun to dissect, but until the football team gets in the field and plays these games, I'm not going to really know for certain. Just all fun and games of speculation. But the Ravens' window is closing. They made it harder on themselves now. If you really want to, you know, tickle your playoff fancy here, the Ravens sit at number 7 in the AFC. Outside looking in, the Bengals are the 6th seed right now in the AFC. So the Ravens, they're right there, but they got to keep pace. I mean, the Bengals are 5-3, and the Ravens are 4-4. So they're right there, a game out of first place. Steelers are in first place, but because of the winning percentage, we know it's a tie. So they're, because they're 4-2, and it's just weird the way percentage goes. So the Steelers are there. By virtue of a half game, Bengals are there, and we got these are our next 2 opponents, guys. So, you know, keep the faith, keep your heads, keep your wits. It's going to be okay. Breathe. We got the Steelers. We handled them in their house. They come to us now, and I know they beat us here last year, but that was last year, and you got to throw those records out, even what we did back in week 4, that's all done and with. Even though we did shut him out in the second half, we're confident. But the way the Ravens are and the way the Steelers are going, they're 2 different teams. You know, I alluded to this in a couple shows before. You know, you are a regular, says you are, but it's not just, you know, it's more than meets the eye, because the Steelers started bad and they look like they weren't even going to make the playoffs. Now they're in first place right now by a slim margin, but they're there. And the Ravens started off so well, and they faltered lately, losing 3 out of the last 4, 2 in a row. Their first losing streak of this year. So, young season, but Ravens can just take 1 game, turn around, get the 5-4 by the bye week. But the Panthers, they gave us everything and then some, and wasn't good enough. And even though the Ravens scored that garbage time touchdown, in light of that, that's why I want to close the show here, is not only Lamar Jackson got his first NFL touchdown rushing in the Saints game, but he had his first NFL passing touchdown. In consecutive weeks, he has a rushing and a passing touchdown. Again, garbage time. Don't hold much stock to it. It was a solid throw, in what I've seen. But also congratulations in Hayden Hurst, garbage time or not, counts as a stat. Hayden Hurst is on the board with his first Raven touchdown, his first NFL touchdown of his young career, and it was great to see both draft picks this year connect on that, and hopefully that's something we want to see in the future, and that's something exciting. And but right now, as much as it could frustrate people and some it could make people happy, Joe's the quarterback. This is Joe's team. He's the best man to lead the Ravens, because young Lamar is not ready, and you've seen that especially last game. But the score, it wasn't even close as that score indicated. The Ravens got beat. They got beat hard. And I've always said, hey, if you're going to lose one, lose it like this in fashion if you're going to take an L. I don't like taking an L like we did against the Saints, guys. That was brutal. I hate taking L's like that, because you're like, ugh, it was so close. You nitpick everything. It's under a microscope. It's hard to be under a microscope when you lose 36-21 or essentially 36-14. So, you know, it's really hard, because you're just like, they suck today. They got beat. Let's go back next week and get it right. you know, that's all you can do. Now, there's no excuses, but you can't have another ugly loss like that. The Ravens got to get it right, got to go back to the workshop, back to the grind. Ravens Nation, it is Steelers week. Let's put this behind us. We got out of Charlotte. We're moving back home for a month. Let's do it. This week, Baltimore Ravens, let's fly high in the Steelers week.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by Brad Lepore and Daniel Kelly from the DBK Studio. For more information, go to brandocash.com.
The Call is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at baltimoresportsreport.com.